C1A. Number 3A.
This morning we have begun to have a look at the scriptural Noah, and we have seen that they epitomize the tone of soul, principle, life, just as Mr. Dawley has it as the Word, as the Christ. Now, we must naturally know what tones of soul, principle, life we find here. It isn't just any tone of soul, principle, life, but that tone which symbolizes the Word as the Christ. So we will find through the whole chapter, as a tone of soul, a very specific aspect of soul. Namely, we have seen it is that aspect which is characterized in Galatians when Paul said, "And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lust." It is that attitude in us which is willing of self-immolation, self-sacrifice, self-denial, rebuking sin in us, the willingness to go the way from sense to soul, the willingness to reform and actually go the way of reformation, and so redeeming oneself of sin. Then the tone of principle, which is epitomized in 1 Corinthians, where Paul said, "For Christ sent me not to baptize, but to preach the gospel." It is showing here the tone of principle, first in what it doesn't mean. It isn't to baptize. It isn't preaching without living what one preaches. It stands therefore against that sense which demands obedience to dead doctrines, ceremonies, to theories of men, to ritualism, to systems of religion and worship. But it is positively that inward attitude which we take and say, "Yes, I live up to the principle which Jesus lived up to." That's the gospel. That's the new tidings of man's oneness with God, with the Father. It's therefore a living principle, because Jesus didn't just preach. He preached by living. He preached by proving what he said. He practiced really by demonstration. He preached by proofs and doing the work. In this chapter, you will so often find that combination of words which says teaching and practice. It is always that teaching which is teaching through the living example, through the showing forth of the principle and of the theory of the divine principle. So we have the third scriptural note from Luke, from the Passover, where Jesus said at the Passover, "For I say unto you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God shall come." And you get here a sense of the newness of life, which is freed from the bitterness of life, which has freed itself from the cup of sorrow, where Jesus said at the end of his life career, showing forth the laying down of a false sense of life and taking up a spiritual sense of life, where he showed forth that he is no more going to drink the cup of bitterness, of the bitterness of life, but that he will drink it anew, as Matthew says it, in the kingdom of God. That life becomes to him the inspiration of life, the even flow and even progression of life. It shows, so to say, that at the Passover, Mrs. Eddy says that Jesus' Last Supper closed forever Jesus' ritualism and concessions to matter. See, only at his Passover, at the end of his life, he closed the concession. He did no more make any concessions. But up to that point, his working out of life eternal were accompanied by here and there concessions to the human life. You see quite clearly that we today, if we want to live, we have to make concessions. And it is the wisdom of us to know how far we shall go in making concessions. But the law of atonement always pushes us and pushes us and pushes us to make less and less concessions. It pushes us to draw closer and closer to the spiritual ultimate in the measure as we can do it. But the whole chapter never asks us to do it right from the beginning. Through the whole chapter goes a gradual evolution and the gradual working out of that thing. We will always find that sense of gradual working out our life problem. And so only at the end of Jesus' life career, Mrs. Eddy says, he closed, the Last Supper closed forever Jesus' ritualism and concessions to matter. Then he was ready to be pushed into the newness of life, where all the bitterness and burden of life was left behind. So we get here the entering into the new realm, into the kingdom of God, into the realm of love, as she says, and it's we get the sense of rising into the newness of life as spirit. When you read this chapter through, perhaps you do. It would be good if you would read that chapter through once or twice only with one object, namely just to feel that sense of soul principle life, how that tone and touch is going through that chapter, because that's the main point of the chapter. Without having that attitude more and more firmly established in us, we miss the whole value of the chapter, because the whole value of the chapter is that attitude is awaking in us, which says, as soul, I'm willing to sacrifice self, egoism, and I'm willing for self-sacrifice and self-denials and self-immolation, and I'm willing to express that sense of principle, to live up to a principle, even if it is against material theories, human theories, against ritualism, against common opinion, against any other so-called human concept, and is imbibed with the spirit of life, which shows the hope that at the end we will be pushed, that attitude pushes us into the newness of life, where we no more drink the bitterness of experience. That really you will feel right through the chapter that the touch of soul and principle, that living that touch of soul and principle is always doing one thing, namely bringing out a higher sense of life, pushing us into a newer sense of life, into a more exalted sense of life. Jesus rose through those experiences, and so we rise through those experiences. Here it is answered that question, how can I be exalted above the material and human plane? What is the method to get that exaltation? That exaltation is here shown not as just realizing that exaltation. Here in Atonement and Eucharist it is shown that exaltation comes about only through that sense of soul as sacrificing self and sense, and only through preaching the gospel in Jesus' way, by living up to the principle against doctrinal creeds and against Pharisaical creeds and against human theories and dogmas, and that enables us to be exalted. See how very different this chapter is from the first chapter. Here it is a very sturdy living sense that is demanded of the student. Also, when you read it through in regard to these scriptural epitomes, you will find time and time again that that sense of life is brought out in the text as a sense that life is that which destroys sin, sickness, and death. Time and time again, that sense of sin, sickness, and death comes in, because it is showing that life is that living force which drives us to the living realm, and in order to be driven and exalted to the living realm where there is no burden, no cross, no bitterness, in order to be pushed into heaven, so to say, by the Christ impulsion, we have to let behind the opposite of soul, namely sin, and we have to let behind the opposite of principle of true harmony, namely discord, dis-ease, and we have to let behind the opposite of life, namely everything that is deadly, that is destructive, be it dead ceremonies, dead beliefs, dead living, death in general. It shows, that whole epitome, or that scriptural note shows in life, that atonement tells us that we can't live the life we want to live. We cannot choose for ourselves, Mrs. Eddy said in atonement. We have to go the way which Jesus went. And so we cannot determine the life we want to live. We can only live the life which is identical with the principle of being. You hear again the positive sense of soul principle life. To live that life which is identical to the principle of being. That's our only choice. To try to live any other life will bring suffering and will bring no exaltation. It will just bring repetition of suffering and experience. Whereas living that life which is the life of principle is our real career. See, just as we said yesterday, what is the purpose of the chapter of prayer? And we felt, or better, I felt, you may feel different, it is answering the question, how should I live to make a success out of my life? How to get something out of my life? And we saw it is giving everything to God. Then, here in the second chapter, the problem which is presented here is a problem which you may have heard time and time again. That people say, what's the purpose of this life? What is the purpose of living? And you know, so often the beginners in Christian Science, especially those who take it in earnest and are sincere about it, they hear about life which is spiritual, and they get fed up of the human life, and they think the best thing is to go out of life. And they even think, well, suicide wouldn't do any harm. If life is anyway spiritual, why not kill oneself and get rid of it? And we know, naturally, that that is not solving the problem, but making it more difficult. Atonement and Eucharist comes and says, I tell you what the purpose of life is. The purpose of life is just the other thing, what this enthusiastic may say, namely, it is to lay down the mortal life, step by step. That's the purpose of this human life. I don't see any other purpose. What this human life can achieve. If life is spiritual, well, then the purpose of our human life is to lay down the mortal sense of life and get the spiritual sense of life. But not through killing, but through life. Not through killing, but through that scriptural note of soul principle life. Through that wonderful spiritual understanding of soul which is willing to see through the selfish aspect of life, and it's which is willing to conform to the living principle here and now, and this in order to disprove sense testimony and to disprove human theories and human dogmas, and only through that disproof of sense testimony and of Pharisaical creeds and dogmas, we reach real life. We are pushed into the third scriptural note of life, where we drink no more the cup of bitterness, but where we drink the wine anew in the kingdom of heaven. So we have a purpose in life. The purpose in life, therefore, doesn't seem to be a human career, but a divine career. And that divine career is to grow in understanding to the point where we see that life is and has been spiritual. But then we understand life as spiritual. Then we reach life which is spiritual through a real understanding and not through suicide, not through neglecting the human and the material, but by overcoming and abandoning it in a scientific and a Christian way. That touched another point which we feel when reading the chapter through with regard to the scriptural notes, that so often in this chapter a lot of weight or a lot of stress is given to understanding in the tone of life, not in the tone of spirit. That's so, and I will give some time to this point in the next session, because it's a very interesting point. Here I just want to awaken the thought to it, so that when you read the chapter through, you may just consider that a little bit. How in this chapter she so often points out that understanding life is brought about or is furthered, is nourished, especially through atonement and Eucharist. That through that sense of fulfilling the tone of soul as self-sacrifice, self-denial, self-immolation, through fulfilling the tone of principle as really living according to a principle and not according to human sense and human will and human wishes and human dogmas, that only through that inward sacrifice our understanding of life divine is furthered. Can you say furthered? Is yes? See. Now, I like that, because perhaps in our mentality there is something which is too strong there, which feels understanding is something which I get through knowing. That if I study more and if I search more and if I investigate more, my understanding grows. Well, it does, but only to a small extent. To a higher extent, it grows through atonement and Eucharist, through actually going the way, through actually exemplifying in one's life, here a little, there a little, step by step, by disproving the testimony of the physical sense, by living against the sense testimony, and living against that which sin and sense ask us to do, that by living more and more in accordance and in obedience to a principle, by living more principled than living according to dogmas, that has in itself, you see, that has nothing to do with knowing and studying, but that brings a higher understanding of life, a higher understanding of life, and a clearer appreciation of life, and therefore a clearer appreciation what real life is. You see, only when we have that, we can really appreciate Jesus' career. If we ourselves have never, to a certain extent, live through atonement, we will never appreciate Jesus' career. We will misunderstand him. The world has misconstrued Jesus' career. They have never valued rightly, not the single component part of his career did the world measure aright, she says in this chapter. The world can't measure it aright. They can study and investigate and write commentaries on those Gospels, but they can't measure it. That we can measure it is only that in that measure as we go through that life too. Only living that life which Jesus lived can make us understand that life. And also, you will find in this chapter the other wing, these two wings of understanding, of demonstration, that she says, our power for spiritual healing, our power of demonstration grows in the measure as we fulfill in our life atonement and Eucharist. That our power of demonstration is not something which we can acquire by merely studying. Here in atonement and Eucharist, the stress is that spiritual power is developed in each one of us in the measure as we are willing to drink the cup first and to live up to the Passover, and then we are endowed with bigger power. I like that sense, and I would like you to consider it too, because so often we hear, and if I would be naughty, I would tell you nice stories about it from America, but I can't do it. To show how so often practitioners, they would like to be more successful, but you just can see that whenever the demand of a dominant Eucharist approaches them, they run like rats. See, and then they are so surprised that their whole nature and inward strength is not unfolding and unfolding. Now, this is more or less the touch of that scriptural note. And it's one of the main points I would like you to consider, because it is an attitude. This is an attitude, an inward attitude, which is thoroughly impregnated by the tone of soul as sacrifice of self, self-denial, reformation, by principle, which is actually following, not only in thought, but actually following the life which Jesus lived and demonstrating the life that Jesus demonstrated, and then as life, for what? For what? Just to go on and on and on, always self-sacrificing, self-sacrificing, and self-sacrificing, drinking the cup of bitterness? No. That is the way. I'm the way, Jesus said. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. That is the way that pushes us into that new life, into that life which is always new, into a higher sense of life, into an enhanced sense of life, into the rhythmic round of life. So really, what we are sacrificing is only a false sense of life. Human sense, we are sacrificing human sense for a divine sense. So we should be jolly happy to sacrifice, because it's always sacrificing hell for heaven. We never sacrifice something which is good and real and helpful and sustaining. We always are only sacrificing something which is anyway dragging us down and down and down, instead of exalting us and exalting us and exalting us. And you can feel, as I was speaking through these three tones, that really the main tone and the overtone of these three is life, that everything hinges to life. Just as in the chapter on prayer we had as the scriptural note, mind, spirit, soul, and everything was hinging to soul, that everything was driving to the main point of soul, namely as the true object of understanding. Here, in the chapter on Atonement Eucharist, everything is driving to life. Soul is only asking self-denial because it wants to free ourselves, not only of corporeal sense, but of the corporeal sense of life. Life is much more important than the sense testimony. And principle just wants to free us from a dead doctrine, from a dead so-called principle. It's again a living sense. And naturally, life has that sense of gaining the spiritual and life and the newness of life. You see, it's a life purpose. Everything drives to life. It is asking us, what do we live here for? Do we live here for this or that or the other? Well, we live here, divinely seen, to work out the question of laying down mortal sense of life and taking up the divine sense of life. That's our wonderful life purpose. That's our career. And our career should be measured by the measure in which way we accomplish this new life. You see, the argument is that sacrifice is bringing death, that the more we sacrifice, the less we have. That's a false argument. The true argument is that the more we sacrifice, the more life we have, the more life we bring. The more we sacrifice, the more we throw off the burden, and the easier we can go through the needle's ear into the kingdom of heaven. But with a lot of burden, we cannot go through the needle's ear.
Aye.
Well, I'm glad I made that mistake. You will remember it all your life.